a boutique and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
We could do, there's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
And clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for September 16th, 2022.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
We are unstoppable. Another world is possible.
The First Amendment is our permit.
System change, not climate change.
Occupy Wall Street brought many movements together. Tomorrow, September 17th, marks the 11th anniversary.
Today we welcome Russell Lum and Apollo of the Occupy Wall Street Environmental Solidarity Working Group.
Hi, Russ. Please introduce yourself.
Hey, my name is Russell Lum. I am an organizer, both of passion and of career, and involved in Occupy Wall Street, particularly the peak of which in 2012, and a member of the Environmental Solidarity Working Group and the Immigrant Worker Justice Working Group. Feels like many years ago now, wouldn't be the organizer I am today, had we not done those things, and had we not learned a lot of lessons together.
Cool. Apollo?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Apollo, as everyone knows, still organizing as well as acting as a photojournalist, live streamer, a strong organizer with the OWS Outreach Working Group, Environmental Solidarity Working Group, one of the longest working groups in Occupy, actually, as well as director and organizer of OWS Special Projects Affinity Group since 2011. It's just been a continuous momentum run from 2011 until now.
Tell us more about Occupy Wall Street. Start with you, Russ.
Occupy Wall Street, it was an innovation in being electric for the left as far as realizing that we could get traction generalizing the enemy and trying to wrap our arms around the biggest problem we could name. Which I think chiefly at the core of it is capitalism, and that it actually works to name that enemy, to organize around the harms of capitalism and the structure of capitalism, and that people wanted to be part of that. It was an infectious and snowballing movement in a really powerful way. And so pleased that I was in New York City on the first day of Occupy Wall Street and many, many days thereafter to remake the world in light of kind of a new left kind of demands and a new, what I hope we talk more about is a new inclusiveness in who could be seen as helping us change the world.
Yeah, we have a blur mark on the bottom of our blurb that says, excuse it. How does it go? I'll see if I can enlarge it. Sorry for the inconvenience. We are trying to change the world. So,
yeah, Apollo, your thoughts?
I agree with that statement. Another good statement from that time, which I think captured the moment of what people were feeling. It was just a simple sign, but it took on a life of its own because it captured what people of all economic levels were feeling, the 99% were feeling. Occupy itself, I got there the end of the first week. At that time, and, you know, what I could feel at that point is that no one really expected it to go on as long as it did or to become the movement that it did. People had been screwed over with pensions, jobs, education, health care, you know, banks, you know, that were responsible for a lot of it, were getting bailouts and then paying bonuses. And I'll point out the fact one or two did give money back once they were caught. And that, doing that, but the movement itself was made up of people, despite what the media portrays, of working class people, poor, middle class, of all strata of the, you know, of society. And, you know, it struck a chord because people were looking for something, for some answers and some accountability that they weren't getting. And I personally think that the movement continued on into other movements that have grown since then.
Yeah, I know I have found that when I, you know, in other movements, I find people who were part of Occupy. Oh, I was Occupy San Francisco. I was Occupy Boston, whatever. And I noticed in Bergen County, we were largely an older group. In New York City, the leaders were the young folks, and apparently that was true in Boston as well.
Now, what struck me is that it really was a leaderless inter-society. We were people of all ages. Like Sally said, there were also young people in the older predominant group, and there were older people in the younger predominant group. But there was a mix of ages, and the lack of ageism was so refreshing. Mm. I was like, you know, us older activists have been up to that point a little disappointed that there wasn't a hope for the future, that everybody seemed to be into their own thing and nobody seemed to be activists anymore. And boy, Occupy Wall Street just opened our eyes to the fact that there is hope for the future, that young people are there and young people are willing to look at older folks for what they have to offer and vice versa. I love that. I think, Russell, you touched on that at one point.
Yeah. And to circle in on something you said, Donna, I think Occupy was only leaderless in the respect that there wasn't already somebody sitting in the chair, so to speak. And so if you put in time, you could create hubs of energy that would do Occupy's work and that everyone would credit you as doing Occupy's work unobstructed. And so folks' interest and protest after protest. They followed the leadership that people took on for themselves, and the energy, it coalesced around people who were doing stuff. There was only a, I would say, like a deferential hierarchy as it pertained to what we called GSD. If you were getting stuff done, you were a leader. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so happy to have been involved in Occupy Environmental Solidarity Working Group, because of how much we got done. It was an open door to make that movement your own, to make the communities we build within it your own. And everybody had to, I think by the logic of the consensus-based approaches of it, the General Assembly-based approaches of it, by those logics, yeah, and anybody of any age should be there. And that everybody's voice should play, and that we should be made stronger by one another's variety of years of experience, and across class lines as far as who the activists actually were.
Something I noticed at the national gathering the next summer in Philadelphia was the number of people whose voices were being heard for the first time. It was so hard to come to consensus around what the vision was, because we couldn't throw out anybody's vision. They were being heard, the marginalized, for the first time, and that was powerful.
Apollo, it's still going on, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is the way I look at it, is going back to 2011 and then up to this point. The park itself, the initial groups that went in, that came together, decided to heed the call that Adbusters put out, had their meetings from like January, February, going up to September, planning this action. They were mostly in the front part of the park. And then as others came, there did seem to be some division that seemed to be created, sort of like the up part and then the down part of the park. And there also seemed to be certain voices that weren't being heard, but those issues were trying to be addressed. I see those same issues in movements that are taking place today or since then, where you have those that are on the margins that don't feel as if they're being heard. And oftentimes their voices or concerns are overlooked. But I also find groups that are trying to address that. One thing I found with like environmental solidarity, it's like you did have, were every voice counted when meetings were taking place and opinions and ideas were accepted. And I only find a few groups like that around today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes.
I remember, I mean, I would look upon Russell Lum and Apollo and Donna were all leaders in Occupy Solidarity Working Group. And that's not the only ones we had. I mean, Stephanie was a leader and Michelle was a leader and Pete was a leader. And when it came to TPP, I was a leader. And it was a wonderful feeling to know that you could rely on anyone, mm-hmm. and that the people who were those leaders didn't have to take on the whole burden, because they had all these people to share the burden with. And when I talked about the Trans-Pacific Partnership at a meeting, I was overwhelmed by it, and I didn't know how to bring it forth. And Michelle and Pete just took it on and just sort of broadened it. And explained my explanation, and I'll never forget that day. I've been in church services that didn't have that kind of spirituality to it. And you should see Russ and Mark nodding.
There was a kind of magic. Yeah.
No, go ahead, Russ.
Oh, just to add that there was a kind of magic of what was going to be said next, and kind of a street corner style speechifying sometimes, whether to an internal audience of Occupy or at the actions themselves, trying to get the attention of the passing public and all. But there was a magic as to what you were going to hear next, and there was a participatory aspect about being able to say what you were going to hear next on account of the mic check.
Don't forget the mic check.
Very powerful and very fluid, and it, anything could have been said, and it all felt like it was going towards, throwing in our hands for to make a massively remade society together.
I remember the Saturday afternoon discussions with such a diverse group of people, ages, genders, races, what have you, talking about such intellectual things that never talked about elsewhere. And really, what society should look like. It was fabulous.
It's true. I mean, on the TPP side, that was never an easy issue to communicate to people. It's not a sexy issue. It's not an issue that, where you can come up with one specific phrase that resonates with people. But, the individuals working on it did an amazing job, definitely as far as that goes. But I think one of the strengths that we had was, and this is for New York, and I'm pretty sure for others, Boston, D.C., Chicago, Oakland, as far as New York goes, we had a good group of individuals who had certain skill sets. And those skill sets had to do with public relations, had to be to do with art, had to do with communicating an idea in a short, concise moment or a few words to resonate with people.
And Apollo, the trait set of being welcoming and maybe it's a skill or maybe it was people's energy, but one of the things that made Occupy go, especially the working groups that we're speaking of, was how warm the community was. And how well we did at feeling belonged in the spaces, small and large, within Occupy, it couldn't have happened without camaraderie, without solidarity, and without a spirit of welcoming.
Apollo, in our last few minutes, Apollo, why don't you tell us about tomorrow, the event tomorrow, September 17th.
As I've been doing every year, it's basically, I put it together because I always felt that, one, people don't get together as often as they need to. Two, that there always needs to be where people reconnect with the energy, with the history, with one another, to find out what people are doing, to find out, what opportunities are available for the future. Tomorrow, it's basically a gathering. There are a few ideas for a number of teach-ins, which I'll be posting up later today. I just need to confirm who the speakers were going to be during that. There is a 3 p.m. press conference as well, but it's running from 9 until 10.
It's I sure hope we can continue some of the exciting things that happened with Occupy. The food that was there, we've always had great meals, lots of donations, people sharing clothes, books. There's something called the Really, Really Free Market that has continued after Occupy, where everybody brings stuff and shares it with people every 3 months. There are a lot of outgrowth.
Let me add just real quick that Adbuster has been pushing out a call for September 17th. As well, on Twitter and through their accounts. So, I think a lot will be happening.
And I think one of the reasons the camaraderie, whatever that is,
camaraderie,
it was so great. There's something special about being together all the time. When you occupy a space like that, and you can just kind of discuss things as they come up. That lends magic. And yet it also has all the problems of a little city.
In the last few minutes, tell us about, Sally, you were telling us about the outgrowth of Occupy Sandy. Occupy Sandy was a wonderful experience to be part of, and how well organized we were in helping Operation Sandy. But talk about the Amazon wedding registry, and then we've got to go.
Okay, that was a really creative thing that hadn't been done before. We Occupy realized that they needed specific items, and if they put them up on Amazon, people could donate them from all over. I had somebody from Hawaii call and say, what do I do? Oh, there's your registry. I'll send a, something.
Where is Zuccotti Park? Tell people where it is.
It's in Lower Manhattan on the corner of Liberty and Broadway.
It's about two blocks south of Fulton, two blocks north of Wall Street.
Yes. As usual, guys, the time flies by and we need to wrap it up. But thanks for joining us. For more information on tomorrow's anniversary event in Zuccotti Park, go to Facebook and search for S17-2022 or go to our website for the link, ecoradio.org. Join us in 2 weeks, Friday, September 30th at 2:30 p.m. for discussion of wastewater issues. Oh, and we just got a notice from management that we are on for September 23rd. So come back and listen to us September 23rd.
For the live concert in Times Square for International Peace Day on Wednesday, September 21st, we still have VIP seats available for a donation of $100 to WBAI. The array of talent is so huge, we don't have time to list them all. You're going to love being in the front row.
Our website has information on a variety of environmental topics, such as the September 22nd hybrid meeting of the Indian Point Decommissioning Board. Is it really safe for Holtec to discharge radioactive water into the Hudson River? No.
No.
To listen to this show or any of our past shows again, it's all at www.ecoradio.org.
That's www.ecoradio.org.
Also, for more details and advance notice of upcoming shows, those of you online, please go to www.ecoradio.org and sign up for our email list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. Enter eco-logic.
Now, mainstream media kept asking, what's your message? They really didn't understand Occupy. Huh. We're different. WBAI realized that this was not just another movement. It was something special. It changed the vibe at the station. Producers suddenly were more optimistic for the future. Their shows got better. WBAI doesn't accept ads or donations from the 1%, which is part of the reason you hear us asking for your support so often. We need you for WBAI and Ecologic to exist.
Ecologic and WBAI continue to offer you important news, information, and entertainment. Radio might seem free, but there are costs. Like everyone, the station has rent to pay. As an employer, we have a shoestring payroll and a call center. Our listener-supported radio station needs you.
Most of our premiums can be found both on their own webpage, ecologic.wbai.org, and on give2wbai.org. To choose from a wide variety of premiums on topics from solar energy to indigenous rights, go to ecologic.wbai.org, leave out the www, and donate in the name of your favorite program, Ecologic. To become a member or contributing monthly as a BAI buddy, call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. We love to see those BAI buddy pledges. And shout out to Karen Anderson, who said she's going to sign up as our BAI buddy.
Yay! We work hard every week to bring you new information and guests who are on the front lines of many environmental issues. Most of the WBAI staff, including us, are volunteers. Pledging now, during this show, really helps Ecologic especially.
Our thanks to our excellent engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you.
I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellar.
And I'm Donna Stein. join us Friday, September 23rd and Friday, September 30th. That's when we will speak on wastewater issues.
2:30. Solar power, inexpensive energy. So.
From WPFW in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Friday, September 16th. Here are some headlines. Biden administration officials are set to meet today to discuss how the administration should respond to Republican governors sending migrants north in protest of the president's border policies. A White House official said the meeting had been planned prior to Texas Governor Greg Abbott sending two busloads of migrants to Vice President Kamala Harris's residence in Washington on Thursday. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis also sent two planes carrying migrants to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts on Wednesday. The actions are widely being viewed as publicity stunts intended to draw attention to Biden's handling of the border crisis, rather than provide solutions that would address the realities of the strained immigration system. President Biden accused the Republicans of playing politics with human beings and using them as props. The roughly 50 migrants who were sent by plane to Martha's Vineyard were transported to a military base today to receive shelter and humanitarian support. The Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles has reversed its decision to grant George Floyd a posthumous pardon for a 2004 drug conviction, according to a letter obtained by CNN. The about-face on Wednesday comes nearly a year after the board voted unanimously to recommend the pardon, and more than 2 years after Floyd was killed by former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. In 2021, Chauvin was convicted of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. The board did not cite a reason for its decision in the letter, which was sent Thursday to the Harris County Public Defender, working on behalf of Floyd's surviving family members. Floyd's family filed the pardon application on his behalf in April 2021. The family may apply in 2 years, according to the letter. U.S. District Court Judge Eileen Cannon on Thursday appointed Raymond Deary as the special master to review more than 11,000 documents, some highly classified, that FBI agents seized from former President Trump's Florida residence last month. Deary will be tasked with determining if any of the materials are protected by attorney-client privilege or executive privilege. Siding with Trump, Judge Cannon also wrote that prosecutors cannot use the seized material in their criminal investigation into Trump's handling of the documents until the review is finished. The Justice Department says postponing access to the documents could risk national security, and the government is likely to appeal the decision. Cannon gave the special master a deadline of November 30th to finish his review of potentially privileged documents. And the Senate won't be voting on a bill to protect same-sex marriage until after the midterm elections, senators announced Thursday. The Respect for Marriage Act already passed the House with support from dozens of Republicans, but Senate negotiators could not get the 10 GOP votes needed to pass the bill. The legislation would enshrine federal protections for same-sex and interracial marriages and repeal the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act, which recognizes marriages in the United States as between one man and one woman. Several Republicans said this week that the measure had a much better chance to pass after the election. The bill was prompted by a concurring opinion written by Justice Clarence Thomas when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, in which he raised questions about whether the court might need to revisit its 2015 decision